Welcome to Unashamedly Anabaptist. I'm Nick Ressler, your host, and I'm an Anabaptist. This podcast is a place where I explore a variety of topics and themes from an Anabaptist perspective. What is an Anabaptist? Anabaptist is a term used to describe a type of Christian whose core convictions and values center around things like biblical literacy, peace or pacifism, communal living, simplicity or a focus not on possessions, baptism after belief.
A Christocentric hermeneutic, which is just a fancy way of saying that we understand Scripture through the life of Jesus, that we understand all of Scripture, including the Old Testament, through the life and the lens of Jesus Christ and his teachings. So when Jesus expands upon and expounds upon the teachings of the Old Testament, the teachings of the prophet, the teachings of Moses, we take Jesus's explanations of those things as the correct understanding. We don't look to Moses as the explanation of Jesus's words, rather we look to Jesus's words as the explanation to the rest of Scripture.
Did you know
that although one of the core tenets of belief is peacemaking or pacifism for Anabaptists, not always were the Anabaptists so concerned with pacifism. There was a movement in the Anabaptist tradition called the Munster Rebellion that actually picked up swords and was violent. It overthrew a city and it ended in a terrible massacre of the Anabaptists who did take over the city.
You can learn things like this and other things as we engage some modern events and historical events together on this podcast. Let's keep diving in together.
We live in an era where the largest and most mainstream churches in the evangelical world, and honestly, many outside of the evangelical world, are taking the time to beat up the idea of deconstructionism. Recently, Pastor Matt Chandler went viral accusing those who would be going through the process of deconstruction of doing so out of a desire to adopt the latest in faith fashion. And those are my words. I'm summing it up. Those aren't his words. Essentially, he's saying that it's the latest fad, and he warned that it would lead to deconversion. Lead singer of the band Skillet, John Cooper, who is making more and more of a name of himself, made a public call for Christians to declare war on the ideology of deconstruction, as he's concerned that it walks a fine line towards deconversion. It would appear that there is a generalized fear in the evangelical church towards whatever deconstruction is, leading you away from the faith that you currently espouse. The cultural understanding of deconstruction, in case you're unaware of what it is that it's a dismantling of your faith. If construction is the process of building something, then deconstruction is the process of taking something apart. Construction builds a structure piece by piece. Deconstruction takes it apart piece by piece. It seems that if you are a spiritual leader, then that is something that you might fear your flock or your constituency doing. But the thing is, that isn't deconstruction. Deconstruction is a real thing. It's a real ideology. It's actually a philosophical ideology proposed by a philosopher named Derrida. And it might surprise you to know that the idea was actually centered around literature and words and binary meanings. Derrida proposed that words don't really mean anything without a word that means something contrary to them. This is a little easier to explain on a whiteboard, but I'm going to take a stab at it here with just some auditory skills. Consider the old question, to be or not to be. This means nothing without the interplay of the two contrary and opposing ideas in the statement, to be or not to be. Let's sum up the first one. To be can be summed up with one word, being. Okay? Not to be can be summed up with not being. Or if we want to put it in a single word, not to be can be summed up in a single word, nothing. So the single word or idea of being really doesn't mean anything unless it has an opposing idea, nothing. The single word or idea, nothing, really doesn't mean anything without an opposing idea of being. The two totally opposing ideas depend on one another to give the original question, to be or not to be, any meaning whatsoever. See, the process of recognizing this interplay, these binary meanings, and then breaking it down, this is what Derrida referred to as deconstruction. And he pushed it further than that, allowing the concept not to solely reside in literature. He said these same opposing forces exist in society, and society depends on them as well. Within the philosophical idea of deconstruction, there is both a literary component and also a societal component. Does that sound like the process that so many Christians are going through as they question their faith? Something about literature and society? No. Does the recognition of contrary forces in literature to the meaning of words, does that sound dangerous to folks staying on the straight and narrow? No. Because, quite honestly, we're not talking about deconstruction in that way. What many Christian leaders don't want people doing is actually pretty simple and terribly distressing, if you ask me. Many Christian leaders don't want Christians asking questions about their faith, their church, their leaders, their theology, or the interpretation of Scripture that they've been handed. When you sit in a sermon or a Sunday school class with a gifted teacher, you can be fed a prepared question and a prepared answer. A gifted teacher can even make it seem as though it isn't prepared. If you sit through an apologetics class, and by the way, an apologetics class, like apologetics is the process of learning how to defend the Christian faith and scriptures with well-prepared arguments and answers. So if you sit through an apologetics class, what you'll learn is that there's many trends of questions and arguments that get made. And there are many answers and arguments that can be memorized in preparation to those things. And all of this comes across as discipleship and shepherding and leadership. That's what church and church leaders want you to feel like it is. When they teach you those prepared answers, when they teach you the best arguments that there are, they want you to feel like you're being discipled and shepherded and guided. But in reality, it's simply the intentional stagnation of someone's growth. It's foot binding. It's deliberately refusing to teach a person to fish, all the while preparing them 7-day-old cod in lots of butter and breading. It sort of tastes good, but you know it's a little rotten underneath. And here's the thing. I promise you it's the opposite of what Jesus would do. A philosopher named Descartes proposed an idea called Cartesian doubt. It was a process of slowly questioning all that you held as beliefs, and it was based largely upon where those beliefs were rooted. Could you prove that they were true? Did you know that they were true, or were you just told that they were true? It was a slow form of reduction that was meant to leave you with a foundation of beliefs that you could trust, and then upon this foundation you could rebuild. This is the process that I took my faith through 2 decades ago when I nearly walked away from God. Why did I nearly walk away from God? Because the answers that I had been supplied from my childhood, from my summer camp, from my Sunday school, from my family, those answers no longer answered the questions that I was asking. And quite honestly, they weren't even true answers once I dug a little deeper than the questions that they were set up to answer. So when I nearly walked away from God, I began to go through a painful process that left my faith reduced to a single idea that I knew for a fact was true. And I'm not going to tell you that the process of Cartesian doubt is a fun process. It's a worthwhile process, but it's hard. And I was left with a single idea that I knew for a fact was true, not because I read it in the Bible, not because I sang it in a song, but because I had experienced beyond a shadow of a doubt this truth: God is love. I knew this to be true. Surely it did help that Scripture agreed with it. But upon that idea, I could rebuild my faith. It was a slow process. It's a process that continues even now today, decades later. But even today, when I encounter a new idea, I use the process of Cartesian doubt to measure it against what has come before it. Does this new idea or proposition line up with what I know to be true? That base, that the basic root of my foundation, God is love. And now everything else that's been built upon it. If this new idea, this new proposition, doesn't line up with that, then perhaps this idea may not belong in my spiritual house. Or maybe I need to spend some more time with it. Now, here is why deconstruction is so important. And we'll call it deconstruction, because that's a pop culture reference point at this point. Even if it's not the actual accurate term, everybody knows it is deconstruction. They don't know it is Cartesian doubt. Could we work to try and change it to the actual right term? Sure, we could, but is it worthwhile? Probably not. So call it deconstruction. Call it Cartesian doubt. Call it whatever you will. Here's what we can call it. Here is why asking questions is so important. Jesus asked questions. Jesus encouraged people to ask questions. Jesus is the one who told us that new wine doesn't fit into old wineskins. He told us that we were going to have to walk away from the old wineskins. The old ways were not going to be able to house the new ideas. We can look through the history of Scripture and know that every prophet asked questions. Every prophet asked questions of their society, their culture, and yes, even their religion. And their religious leaders. The reformers asked questions. The reformers that created the Christian church asked questions of the Jewish leaders of the day. The Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church that eventually split asked questions. The Protestants asked questions. The radical reformers asked questions. The reformers, all of them, asked questions. Each movement on our theological history has begun with questions. And let's say even more. When women wanted rights, not just in society, but in the church, they asked questions. When our black and brown, our non-white brothers and sisters wanted rights, not just in society, but in the church, they asked questions. Asking questions are important, and if we are not free to ask questions, then we are not free. God demands this kind of freedom for his people. For God is bigger than any question that we could ever propose. And God is small enough to sit with us in the waiting as we pursue an answer to it.